Hello and welcome. We're going to wrap up our corporate governance lectures with kind of a review of what corporate governance is. We've been talking about corporate governance for several weeks now. It starts with the elements of the corporation, which is shareholders, directors, officers, and employees. Corporate governance merely is how is the corporation run. And it starts, of course, with shareholders. Remember that chart that we showed you? Because the shareholders elect the directors. The directors are the policymaking entity, and it is a Republican representative form of government whereby the shareholders vote for the directors and then the directors make the policy decisions. And then they hire the officers and the employees, generally employees hired by the officers through a delegation of the directors to be able to run the corporation. So let's jump into this and where we are. Again, this is kind of just a review of everything we've been talking about. Corporate governance, running the corporation. The board of directors of the New York Business Corporation law, as well as the articles of incorporation of the corporation and the bylaws of the corporation, provide very broad powers to the board of directors to manage and run the corporation, because they are the ultimate policymaking entity of the board. The policymaking entity of the corporation, they hire the corporate officers who provide the day-to-day management of the corporation. So it all begins with the shareholders who elect the board of directors. Then the board of directors hire the officers that do the day-to-day operations of the board. The board of directors operates by meetings. Remember, they elect a chair. The chair prepares the agenda for the meeting, working with the corporate secretary to prepare an agenda. The corporate secretary sends out notices of the meeting that they're going to meet. Here's the agenda. These are the items that will be discussed. And the board of directors then turns around and takes votes and passes resolutions of the board to be able to govern it. And the meeting is the quintessential mechanism by which policy is made, including hiring the officers, because that is a board resolution on who they will do, and it's done by the meeting format, again, chaired by the chairman of the board, who's elected by the board members on there. The size of the board of directors has become a very high topic of corporate governance across the country. How big should your board be? Now, the bigger the corporation, you would think the bigger the board. Why? Because they have to have a diverse number of opinions. You want to have people who have expertise in different areas to sit on the board, to offer different opinions. You know, it's kind of like Congress. You want to have a very broad scope of opinions. You break down into committees. Somebody is an expert in this kind of thing or that kind of thing. You want to be able to have them on the board so they can sit in the committee and so they have that firsthand expertise. Well, the more you have diverse opinions, the more people you're going to have to provide their expertise. But the problem is the board meetings then become unwieldy. You can't have a board meeting of, you know, 2,000 people. It just doesn't work. So you have to kind of balance that, have enough experience, enough diversity on the board to be able to offer these different types of opinions that are necessary to be successful with the corporation. But you also have to have it small enough to be manageable, whereby when you hold a board meeting, everybody can come. When you have meetings, people get to listen to the different opinions because, you know, it's not taken up. The whole meeting isn't taken up by 1,800 people talking. You know, you have to be able to balance that. Big corporations tend to have boards which are 25, 30, 50 people. But that's a big board, and it becomes unwieldy at that point. So corporate governance specialists, and yes, those people do exist, have studied this issue. How big a board should you have? The primary corporate governance specialist, the person who is probably more respected than anybody else in this field, is a guy by the name of Ira Milstein. And Ira has looked at this issue substantially, written and opined rather substantively on the size of corporate boards. Ira believes that the magic number for board size is 7 people. He says, when you get above 7, it becomes unwieldy. People can't focus on what others are saying because there's too many there. We ought to have boards of 7 people. Well, far be it from me to disagree with Ira, who is a brilliant man. But the problem with that is, with modern corporate regulation that has come into place, such as Sarbanes-Oxley and Dodd-Frank, where they're putting more and more requirements on boards to break into expert committees, 7 people just can't do the workload. So you have to have a bigger board just to accommodate all these different committees and assignments. And being a board member tends to be a part-time job, not a full-time job for most people. So as a result of this, that 7 number, it's not that it's wrong, because I think Mr. Milstein's comments have a lot of merit, because when you get above that number, it makes it hard and unwieldy to be able to operate. But the problem is because of all this governmental regulation that has come in since the early 2000s on corporate boards to try and address things like the WorldCom scandal, and then after the bubble bursting with respect to mortgage foreclosures and things like that. After that period of time with Dodd-Frank and Sarbanes-Oxley, just having 7 people on a major corporate board becomes a situation where there's not enough people to do the work. So again, it's not that Mr. Milstein's wrong, it's just that other factors have come into play. And as a result, 7 may not be the perfect number anymore, but he sticks to it. And I don't know that he's wrong in his principles. Problem is that there's other factors that have piled onto that. So what's the typical size of a major corporate board? Tends to be around 30. And it depends, again, on the corporation. Remember, they have to pay all these people because few people want to take on the liability and the work of being on a corporate board without being paid. And they get paid rather handsomely for, you know, the amount of time that they're working on. So, you know, that's a factor too. How much is the corporation going to pay their board members? And what's the cost of doing that? The more people you have on it, the higher your cost. So just recognize that issue. There is no perfect number. I wish there was. I think Mr. Milstein's number of 7 would be perfect outside of all these other requirements that you have. So they try and balance it on that. They want to have enough people to provide those diverse opinions without having a breakdown of unwieldiness, being able to listen to the people who are on the board when they want to talk. Okay. Officers. Officers, as we discussed in our previous lecture, are what make the corporation go. They're what make it work. The chief executive officer is where the buck stops. That's the person who will make that corporation successful or not, because they tend to be innovative. They work very closely with the board of directors. They bring back, they are a source of information for the board, and they're the implementer for the board. They do it all. And the other officers work with the chief executive officer to make sure that the policy and the vision of the corporation gets accomplished. Board policies are enforced by the corporate officers. That's how they're put into play. The corporate officers are the enforcement entity. And when I say enforcement, they are the one who carry out the will of the board and the purposes and the work of the corporation. They execute the board action. They carry out the board resolutions. They're the ones who make the corporation work. It's all about the officers. They also manage the employees. The board of directors manages the officers. They oversee them. They're the ones who decide whether or not they're doing a good job, whether they need to be retained, whether they should have a raise. Excuse me. The board of directors oversees the officers. The officers oversee all the rest of the employees. That's something that gets delegated down the line. Employee management, employee administration is done by the officers. Now, do they take certain employees and say, you're going to manage other employees? Yes, they do. Because there is frequently, when you get a big corporation, there's an awful lot of work to be done and a lot of employees. You know, certain corporations literally have hundreds of thousands of employees. So they have to manage them. And, you know, the limited number of officers of the corporation can't manage all of those people. But what they do is they manage the managers and they direct what has to be done. Now, we've been talking about corporate governance for weeks now. Remember, it starts with the shareholders electing the directors. The directors make the policies, the officers implement. The employees carry out the implementation at the direction of the officers. But what happens when this process breaks down? What happens when the corporation isn't carrying out its purposes? When the officers aren't being faithful to their fiduciary duty? When the directors aren't making policies for which the corporation was formed? What remedy does the shareholders have? Now, just like in our constitutional governments, they have the remedy to vote the directors out of office and they can fire them. That is part of the remedies that they have. But what happens if you own a small portion, significant to you, but a small portion of the shares? You can't throw them out of office because you don't have enough votes. It's one vote per share, Jim. So what do you do as a shareholder when you see a breach of fiduciary duty and nobody is taking care of it? If it's an officer, the directors aren't taking care of it. If it's a director, the rest of your shareholders aren't voting the people out of office. So do you have a remedy? Yes, you do. You can sue. It's called a shareholder derivative action. And the reason why it's derivative is because you are suing on behalf of the corporation. You don't directly get any of the proceeds because generally what happens is they have to pay money to the corporation for their misbehavior, whether it be an officer or a director. If they're breaching their fiduciary duty, you can sue them and say, I think you breached your duty. You've hurt the corporation. I want you to pay it money for the damage you've caused. Now realize that shareholder doesn't get the money directly. Why? They're not suing as a shareholder. They're suing on behalf of the corporation. It's a legal fiction. The corporation can't sue for itself. It has to sue through an entity. And the directors aren't suing. Why? Because the directors have either breached their duty of oversight or they breached their duty of loyalty or care. So, what happens? The shareholders sue and they say, you director didn't provide sufficient oversight to the officer, or you officer breached your fiduciary duty with respect to your employees. And you, by doing that, you double dealt, you didn't weren't loyal, you took bad actions, something that wasn't covered under the business judgment rule. You should be paying the corporation money for your misbehavior. We lost money. Values of our shares went down. We're not as productive as we should be. That's known as a shareholder derivative action because the corporation got hurt by your breach of fiduciary duty. You can bring that against a director. You can bring it against an office. Now, what do you do in that action? As a director, as an officer, you can raise the defense, if it's valid, of the business judgment rule. Yes, the corporation got hurt, but I was trying to make it money, and sometimes things don't work out. As the shareholder who brings the action, you have to prove that there was a breach of a fiduciary duty, duty of care, the duty of loyalty, which you owe to the corporation, director, or officer, was breached. If you cannot show that, you don't recover. If you do show that and overcome the business judgment rule, then the corporation itself gets a recovery. Now, you as a shareholder don't get direct benefit, but you get an indirect benefit. Why? Because when you get that recovery, the overall value of your share goes up, and the value of what you own is increased. That's what a shareholder derivative suit is all about. You can bring it for breach of fiduciary duty, fraud, self-dealing, conflict of interest, waste of corporate assets, accounting wrongdoing, inflated false or misleading financial statements, inflated executive compensation, management or board decisions that expose the company to harm or violate consumer protection or other laws. Those are the bases for shareholder derivative suits. But they all come down to two things: a breach of fiduciary duty knowingly made by the officer or the director. So if you breach the fiduciary duty, either the duty of care or the duty of loyalty to the corporation, they can be held responsible. If they don't, and again, most of this is covered by insurance policy unless they did it intentionally. Most of this is saying you did it negligently, but if you can demonstrate intentionally, the insurance will cover it. But if it is negligent, the insurance will. The corporation gets a substantial payment and probably ramifications from that, because if you win a shareholder derivative suit against, say, an officer, the board of directors will end up dismissing them. And if you win it against a director, the shareholders will review that when they're casting their votes for election. Again, we're back to our chart. This is the final wrap up on our chart. This chart tells you everything you need to know about it. Corporate governance. It's a good review. I recommend it. And we're going to see you next time. Thanks so much for listening.